This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you from Groundhog Day. It's yet another Wolverhampton Wanderers game. I woke up this morning and I thought, who are we going to play today? Ah, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Ah, it's them again. And then I went to sleep and then I woke up again. And it's Wolverhampton Wanderers. And that's just what happens. We just seem to play Wanderers every single day. But unlike other games, we don't turn around to them and say, can we play you every week? Because we certainly don't want to be playing them every week, because we haven't beaten them so far this season. So maybe this game will be the one where we can actually pull it out the bag. My name's Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with, I've got a couple of chums in the place. I've got the Allard in the house. How are you?
I'm not too bad, all things considered. Yep, just had a jammy dodger before we started the podcast. Yeah, very nice. A leftover Christmas jammy dodger.
You are a dodgy jammer. The old Allard as well. We've got Laney in the place. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I mean, not only do we play Wolves every week, we're going to be playing Man City every week as well. We've got them in a couple of weeks as well. So, yes, these sequences, they seem to sort of come together. But Jamie Dodger sounds good. That's, I could do with a biscuit, Bill, if I'm honest.
That's right. Let's risk it for a biscuit, as they say. So, but anyway, listen, we've got plenty to talk about on this podcast. We've got Wolverhampton Wanderers who are going to be coming. We're going up to their place on Saturday, so we're going to check them out as well. We've got, who have you got on the player? We've got JB, naturally, some facts and some funk, sequencing himself up right up as well. We're going to listen to the fans after the Man City game as well. We've got the Bees breakdown posse. They're back in effect, actually, after our Christmas and New Year little period where we've gone jiggery pokery as well. We've got Beast Breakdown in the place because I know a lot of people like listening to their tactical and their statistical lowdown on the games as well. And also we've got Dave from Talking Wolves, just going to give us a little bit of a lowdown on the team that we've played three times so far, and it's going to be four times in just over a month. But anyway, let's shoot the breeze. I'm sitting here with my chums, and I suppose the main talking point at the moment now is AFCON, the African Cup of Nations, where Brentford almost had two players in the final, one for each team. Nigeria were playing yesterday, played South Africa, and also you had the Congo as well, Democratic Republic of Congo, and they were playing Ivory Coast as well. And Nigeria tucked into the first game. Frank the Tank Onyeka was right there in the CDM role, actually kind of doing what he does best as well. He's really elevated himself massively in the AFCON as well. And Nigeria got themselves a win, a 1-0 win. And then in the second game, the DRC, I would have argued to say that maybe they should have actually kind of maybe nicked a little lead early on in the game, but they didn't quite get that and they found themselves losing 1-0. So unfortunately, Wisa is not in the final, but he has to stay out there for the third and fourth place playoff game. So he might as well have got through to the final. So a bit of a shame that for him, but still good for Brentford, good for our profile and good for our players. That, what do you say, Laney?
Yeah, it is good for the players. It looks like they're in good nick. I'm surprised that Saman Ghoddos is back. You know, the Iranians went out in the semi-finals to Qatar, a real thriller, a real 3-2. What an ending to the game that was. I mean, Iran hit the post and they had a real crazy deflected shot that looked like it was about to go in, all in injury time. It was like, I think it was like 13, 14 minutes of injury time. Game that never was going to end by the looks of it, but it did end. And Saman Ghoddos, who's back before it even ended, I think. He was walking into Jersey Road and I don't know how he's got back in time. So he literally must have left the stadium, gone to the airport and got himself back to Europe. But yeah, so he'll be back in contention for the Wolves game. But Wieses, as you said, he's gonna hang around a bit. So it's a shame he's not back as well, because we just need as many fit bodies as we can. But yes, I'm all right, Bill. I'm all right.
Which is all good. I mean, the LR, the African Cup of Nations, I must say it never fails to surprise, but it's one of those cups that year on year, it's getting bigger and bigger. It moved from, I think, Eurosport to another station, and now it's on Sky Sports. Some of the games were on the BBC iPlayer as well, live. And I can imagine the final's probably going to be on the BBC iPlayer. I'm sure. I'm not 100% sure, but I wouldn't surprise me as well. But it's one of those ones where, you know, there's a few little jewels, there's a few little moments, and it's a good competition, isn't it?
Yeah, it was on BBC Two, wasn't it? The first semi-final last night. So, you know, that was cool. I think it's... I still think it suffers a bit with the TV coverage. I think that for some reason, they don't seem to be able to really tap into the atmosphere. Did you get that sort of impression when you're watching it? Is that it doesn't really... It's almost like, just turn the crowd up, because I'm sure there's loads of atmosphere. I know the pitches... I know the grounds aren't great, because they've all got... most of them seem to have athletic tracks around, which is always a shit thing with football, as we know. But they could definitely... I feel they could do a better job of somehow making it feel more alive, because I'm sure it's, like, pretty crazy in there, and... you know, and what you see of the atmosphere looks great, but you don't always sort of really get to feel it, I find, with AFCON, which I think is a bit of a shame. I think that's something they should really work on with the TV coverage. I'm not convinced the commentators are out there either. Certainly the ones the BBC's are using, because they sometimes struggle with what's going on that isn't on the, which is always a good clue with what's going on the screen. So, and that would probably also sort of, you know, really give it some more atmospherics too. But overall, it's a fascinating competition most of the time. Was it a fact that was it eight different teams made the last eight than the previous AFCON or something bonkers like that? I mean, how great is that? Can you imagine that happening in the Euros? Very unlikely, I would say.
Yeah. So developing teams indeed, and it's interesting for me because obviously, you know, I go to all my World Cups, and I've been out into South Africa quite a few times watching football out there. Not only at the World Cup, but also watching club football out there, which I love. I've seen the Orlando Pirates, I've seen the Kaiser Chiefs, I've seen Cape Town, I've seen all loads of teams playing out there. Actually, such good fun, such a good vibe. And the funny thing is that when South Africa were playing Nigeria, when they scored. At the back end, I think when they scored the penalty, the equalising penalty, I think, was it, oh, sorry, I've got it right on, oh, my mind's gone, but and at the back end, at the back end of the game, and then they flipped into the crowd, and I saw a couple of my mates from the old South African sort of kind of supporters crew out there as well. There's normally a guy called Saddam, who's the guy that you always wear. He always wears these big glasses as well. I don't know, because Saddam used to go everywhere in South Africa. I didn't notice him there, but I noticed the rest of the crew there as well, which is quite interesting. So it did make me smile, and it always does make me think, you know, how these guys literally get to, I mean, they're literally proper hardcore Bafana. They go to all the games, and, you know, how they travel, how they get out there, because, you know, these guys aren't flush. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, we're not talking about, like, you know, Pitching at all, but they're still kind of, I remember when I was in South Africa and when England played in a friendly, I went out there for a friendly one time. We were in Johannesburg, and next minute they come all the way down to Durban, and they'd taken some sort of overnight bus, and they were staying in some sort of kind of hostel, or it was just, or some of their mates' house. It's just like they just did whatever they can do to follow their football. So I've got real respect for football fans like that who love their team, but they'll just do whatever they can do to travel over land and sea to go and see South Africa play, like, you know what I'm saying? So, but it was, like I said to you, it's good.
It's funny you mentioned the atmospheres, because I went over to the African Cup of Nations when it was held in Egypt, about just before lockdown, it would have been. I saw Mokotjo play for South Africa, and I saw who else was there?
Ben Rama.
No, I'm not sure he made it. I've forgotten who the other guy was. He was in this one as well.
John Vier.
Yeah, John Vier, yes, of course it was, for Guinea. Yes, we saw those games, but I thought the atmospheres were whatever. They were like sparsely sort of, you know, the attendances were quite low. Maybe it was just because it was Egypt, because it was like, you know, in the very north of Africa rather than sort of like central or Western Africa. It might have been more difficult, a lot more travelling to get to, or just it, like some tournaments, they only really come alive in the latter stages. But the atmosphere, certainly in the Ivory Coast game, looked, obviously because they're the host nation, it looked absolutely bonkers. So it's worth experiencing for sure, because it almost seems like the tournament that's still kind of undiscovered. There's always, and I know we don't unearth players like we used to from these tournaments, because most of the big clubs have snapped the African talent up when it was like 12 or 13. They're already over here. But seeing teams like Cape Verde going quite deep into the tournament, it shows that there's like emerging talent in some really unlikely places, because Cape Verde is a tiny little place. For them to get a team that can go long in a tournament like this is incredible. So I'm sure there's some scouts and football talent spotters that have unearthed a few this one, because as you said, the teams that have gone long aren't the predictable ones.
No, I mean, and again, like I said to you, I mean, listen, great competition. At the end of the day, the competition is going to be over very soon, which means that we're going to be looking forward to our players coming back. The question I'm going to ask you is that, do you think that, because we were really nervous about that competition, we thought it's going to do us a bit of damage because we're going to lose some players, and the Asian Cup as well, we're going to lose some players, and we're going to be in a bit of trouble. But in retrospect, looking back on that, do you think it's been a positive or a negative for us?
I mean, overall, I still think it's I think it's a positive for the players. I think for us, we really could have done with having Wiese especially around. So any of the games we played, any game that involved any game we played where Mopes started, we could have done with Wiese to come on as a sub or anything. Yeah, Tottenham, and then we've had Man City, and we haven't really had we haven't had an extra outlet, and that's all. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we miss it desperately, and he's not the quickest. We're missing Ubumo more, but I do think that I think that's definitely where we would have missed him. I also felt that, to be honest, in the FA Cup, I think Onyeka could have had a game. So I'm not. I mean, it is what it is. We know the African Nations Cup. We know who's going to be planning it. So it's not a criticism. It's just. But if you're asking me direct, did we miss players? Yeah, we did.
I think for me, the question I'm asking, I think I was asking the question, is that I was really, really worried that we're going to be in all sorts of trouble from it. But I'm not quite sure if the results probably did go much different than what they could have done, you know what I'm saying, without these players. And I think it could have been a much worse scenario, I think, is what I'm trying to say. You know, would we have got a win against Tottenham if Wiese is in? It's a question mark there. You know, Manchester City is Manchester City.
Yeah.
And Wolverhampton Wanderers, in a strange way, we probably didn't actually want to be in the cup anyway, like, you know, because with our injuries, we'd rather have been out of it. So I'm kind of taking this glass half full, saying... But the bonuses that we got out of it is that they've gone there, they've bigged themselves up, they've got themselves quite a lot of confidence, right? You know, in the way that they've played and the way that their team's done. And it actually they may come back to our team now and be much better players, having been away for a month, than if they were actually here for a month. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to some extent. But there's still we still haven't got through the African Nations Cup. There's still two players that will, Onyeka will start on Sunday. Wiese might not, depending on whether in the third place playoff, in the third and fourth place game, whether they want to sort of, you know, rotate the side a bit. But there's still an element of risk there. And then do they come back fit and fit? Hopefully they do, rather than knackered. Bit of travelling, a lot of games, two games a week, could be a bit knackered.
I think we'd be hurting a lot more if Mbeumo had gone away and got his injury there. I think the exposure to the tournament was obviously taken away, because he was the one that we were always going to miss the most. And you know, we knew that he'd be out. Interestingly, like next year's AFCON, I think, is in Morocco, and they hold it in June and July 2025. So they seem to be out of sequence a bit, because I know that they're advertising this one as 2023, although it's 2024. I don't think there is a 2024 one. I think it's gone to 2025 in Morocco, which is certainly worth going to.
That's going to be bonkers. I mean, that's going to be bonkers. I mean, the Moroccan fans, I mean, I've been in and among them, and they're quite lively, to say the very, very least.
But at least it gets out of the January kind of missing players. You know, it's going to happen in a closed season, so the impact of missing players is going to be reduced, which is only a good thing for a team like Brentford.
And I think this one was planned to be last year, but wasn't there? Isn't it to do with the weather that it got moved again? So the original the plan, I think, with AFCON is now to move into the summer, but I think there were weather issues, so they had to flip it.
Well, when you went, it was in the summer as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, there's been all sorts of moving shenanigans going on there. So anyway, but talking about missing players, we've got a player that has been missing quite a lot for us, and he's going to be missing again for a while. This is Josh De Silva, and the news has come out that he's actually got a really quite terrible knee injury, and he's going to be out for quite a while. Josh De Silva is a player who is he's scored some great goals. He's played some great football for us, and to be fair to Brentford, we've stuck with him. He's been out, he's come back, he's out, he's come back, and for him it's a real gutter that he's got this this terrible injury yet again, because he seems like I've never met him personally, but he seems like a lovely bloke. Everyone talks about him very highly, and the football that he plays, you know, potentially he's a very, you know, he could have been, I say could have been, but could be a massive player. And I remember the story that I have is you know, Rowan, God bless his soul as well. He remember him when he was developing the B team, and I used to speak to him a lot about players. And I remember sort of kind of Josh, we had first started the B team. It began about a year or maybe slightly less than a year. Maybe, I think it's a year. We're going into the second season. And he said to me, I've just signed this player from Arsenal. He's massive. Okay, he's going into the B team. But the whole idea is to get him in the B team, get him up to speed. Then he can potentially be a massive player for Brentford. You know, he was really excited about him. And so for me, you know, I sort of almost see Josh De Silva as the beginning of the start of Brentford taking things up the next level with the B team, and really linked to sort of kind of Rob Rowan and what his vision was for Brentford and where he wanted to go with sort of kind of quality players. And in the end, he did come good, and he came into our side, and he was a key player in our side. And I just think that for everyone at Brentford, Josh De Silva sort of depicts kind of new Brentford, kind of like, you know, not the Uwe Rosler. We've done the Uwe Rosler, we've done the Dean Smith and all that lot, but we're talking about real new Brentford, as in us taking ourselves to that next level as a team. And for him to have this injury is just as a real gutter.
Yeah, it's really terrible for him. It's terrible for us, but it's more terrible for him. Just like he came on against Tottenham, and he looked like he was really, really up for making an impact for the rest of the season. He came on and he looked really lively. He helped create a couple of chances. You know, anyone that remembers the Brentford goal up at the Etihad last year, where Ivan Toney scored in the last minute, it was that Josh De Silva drop of the shoulder, and then he gets it to the byline, and he gets the cross across, and it was just like that all over again. And I thought, brilliant, we've got another player coming back strong, someone who can contribute, someone who we can bring, either bring on a sub, or someone we can play on the right until Mbeumo gets fit. And then he gets absolutely poleaxed by, you know, this ACL or double ACL or whatever the extent of it is, and it's got to be career threatening to a certain degree. It's certainly career impactful, because he's out of contract at Brentford, I believe, at the end of this season. What do we do? You know, what do we do as a club? Do we stand by him? Do we just rehab him? What do we do? It opens a tin of worms. I'm sure, you know, Brentford are an incredibly compassionate club, and I'm sure we will stand by the player, and we'll help him back. I'm not sure what negotiations need to happen behind the scenes, but the well-being of the player will be paramount to any decisions that we make. And you're right, Bill. You know, he's been on a real journey. You know, he joined us in 2018. Sorry, he's played 137 games for us and scored 20 beautiful goals with his left foot. He only scores fucking good goals. We know that. He just needs a fucking good break of luck, and I'm devastated for him. It couldn't have come at a worse time for him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Allard again. He's been, I'd say to you, he's been a key player for us. I mean, we were sitting down there, we took, kind of did an analysis of the minutes that he's played for Brentford, because a lot of people say he hasn't played, you know, that much for us. But, you know, he's been with us for quite a few seasons, you know, and like I said to you, the different times that he's played for us over the different seasons as well. Obviously, this season he hasn't played much, you know, the season before, actually, when he came back, he actually played, you know, just, you know, he played quite a lot of minutes for us as well. I mean, he had one season where he was out for a long period of time. But saying that, you know, sometimes we're talking about him playing sort of 12, 13, 15 games a season. But potentially, Josh De Silva could have, I keep saying, I'm not saying this because obviously he's not playing till the end of the season again, at least, could be a really key player for us, the Allard. And he's the type of player that we are still kind of missing, do you feel?
Yeah, he's a progressive midfielder and he can carry the ball. And I think that's, albeit he doesn't contribute with everything else in midfield, but he can carry the ball through midfield, out of midfield, and he can play wide as well. And I'm gutted for him. I can't tell you how gutted I am for him. When I first sort of heard them, I was just thinking, this can't be true. When the rumours started, and I was just thinking, this can't be true. This isn't fair. Because, you know, he had the hip injury, didn't he, that took him a year, well, maybe over a year to recover from. And you just think, this just isn't fair. He's 25 years old and it just doesn't feel fair for him. Do you know what? Just a week ago, I was thinking, okay, so we found a way of playing 3-5-2, and then we could maybe go 4-3-3, because you could play De Silva on the right and KLP on the left and Tony through the middle, and I think that'd be quite a nice, and then, you know, and I think his time, this might have been his time as well. You know, he had the opportunity to really sort of, you know, yeah, I'm just gutted for him. Absolutely gutted.
Yeah, well, listen, let's see how it goes again. Like I said to you, Brentford have a very good team in backing their players, like I said, through the well-being period as well. You know, we'll sit them out, we'll take care of them. We had Ericsson, you know, we kind of just gave them everything that they wanted to make themselves feel comfortable and make them feel right, you know. So, listen, let's just watch this space. And, you know, he's got obviously set out at least for the end of the season. Let's just see how it goes for next season. But, you know, we wish him all the best in his recovery. Josh De Silva, great player. And a Bees legend, I would like to say, a Bees legend. So, but anyway, look, let's just go back to Monday night under the lights. We're going to go away, have a little drink, then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that team called Manchester City. So Man City came to New Griffin Park. I keep saying, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that, but I'll say it anyway. They came to New Griffin Park on Monday night underneath the lights. It was, again, one of those games where it was a free hit. A lot of fans were just saying that whatever we can get out of it, we get out of it. We're not expecting to get anything. And if anything, we were a little bit disappointed because we looked like we were going to get something out of it in the beginning of the first half, and that kind of raised our expectations. But we were definitely put back in our box in the second half. It was an interesting game. Tell us something. Lainey, how would you describe that game?
Sadly predictable. I did say, it's not about me getting the scores right, because they only happen once in a blue moon, but I've got the last few okay right. I said 3-1 to them, but yeah, we did better than I feared. They just went through the gears. It was like, how long can we put off the inevitable? How long until they create something that ends up in the back of the net? You know, the really positive thing for me was we saw game for he pulled out saves, famously set up the goal, so he got an assist as well for the Morpay goal. It was a clever bit of kind of getting out the wayness by Ivan Toney that allowed the ball to run through. So, yeah, they are just the best team in the world, and you can only try so hard with a team like ours. And they did us proud, I thought, over the 90 minutes. I still think we caused them a fair amount of, confusion and question marks, and we created chances. We could have scored again, I think. I thought we did as well as could be expected, and we got nothing, which was what I thought we'd get.
Yeah, I thought the same. It was it's very difficult. To be honest, I look at the lineup and I just thought, I can't make an argument for us getting anything out of this. And it comes back to, and I've said it already, I just think if you don't have pace, it's really hard to play on the counter-attack. Really hard. Because what happens is, and I'm not, this is no criticism of Mope, because he's done everything he can do. Do you know what I mean? He's wound up other teams, he's scored goals for us, and his play's been absolutely fine. But he doesn't have any pace. And that's just an unfortunate fact. And that, so what happens is that you drop into a deep block, and the minute you get the ball, normally Mbeumo goes, or the wing backs go. And okay, Reguilon went a couple of times, I think. And probably Roslev tried as well. But Mope just, he can go, but he can't go quick enough. So suddenly you're passing to him like deeper the halfway line, rather than kicking beyond him into their half, because then the ball's just coming back at you, because he ain't, and then there were two occasions in the second half where he had to pass back to me, and that was good because it didn't give up possession, but it kind of summed up where we were, and just the fact that it was very, very difficult for us to get anything out of that game. The only way we were going to get anything out of that game was to sneak something, as we did, and then to defend for our lives and not make a mistake, and Foden to have a shocking game, and other players within that Man City team to have a shocking game. And unfortunately, Foden had a good game. He just kept popping up.
Yeah, I mean, for me, again, I keep saying I'm glass half full. There were actually a lot of positive points about that game, because we have to look at the broader picture, and we have to look at, it's not about us playing Manchester City, it's about who we're going to be playing between now and the end of the season, and we need to get our players back in and on form, so that when we play these other teams, you know, not the Manchester Cities, we're actually doing the business against them, because again, we need probably three more wins, maybe four more wins, to actually kind of make sure that we can completely and utterly relax. So for me, I'm just concerned about us making sure that when we play those games, we are ready for them. Now, like I said to you, glass half full. The positives in this game is, there's one positive. I mean, you talked about the goal that we scored. No, we didn't have the speed, we didn't have the pace, but the ball went direct, right, to Mbappe, probably as direct as you can go. And it was, there you go, bang, in the back of the net. But the question I'm going to say to you, though, is that the assist came from Flecken. So you could talk about his distribution being very good, but also Flecken, and listen, we've been talking about Flecken, you know, till the cows come home, about how we're very question marky about him. He nullified a lot of the question marks in this game, and he had a brilliant game. What I'll say is that, you know, it's all right doing it once, but you've got to do it regularly. But we also did talk about the fact that David Raya had quite a dodgy first 6 months until he got himself kind of relaxed. But Flecken had a really good game. And I think if there's anything you're going to take out of that, you can turn around and say, actually, if he continues to have games like that going on to the end of the season, then we might actually start drawing some games instead of losing, or winning some games instead of losing, because he actually might be start saving some balls where he hasn't been saving in the first place. Laney.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I don't think we've been over harsh on him. I just think we've been quite honest about him. He doesn't move his feet. And there was a second before he made his first save where I didn't think he was going to do the same again. I think there was, I don't know who's the first shot was, but he made a full length tip around the post. And it looked like he wasn't going to bother. And he did hesitate for a split second. And fortunately, he made it across the goal in time. And then after that, yeah, it was just one great save after another great save. Probably the best or the most important at that time was when he saved with his feet from Haaland, who was let through from a mistake at the back. And, you know, that goes in, and I fear the floodgates open then. You know, you're right as well what you say say is about is who we play, who else we play, and we have to be strong for everyone else. And these games against teams that, you know, we probably aren't going to get anything from are a good barometer to show that we're mentally and spiritually in a really good place, because, you know, that you can't say that we look defeated or deflated or anything. You know, Sheffield United, I saw them against Aston Villa at the weekend and they just got humiliated. This doesn't seem to be that gene in our DNA at the moment. We you know, it's not to say that we're not capable of getting turned over by a great team, but we're in every game we play, and we just need to play some of the teams now that, you know, we're more evenly matched with. What you can argue that Wolves is one of those, because, you know, barring the game on the 28th of December where, you know, we didn't show up at all and they beat us 4-1, the two other games against Wolves in the Cup have been really, really close. You can't put a fag paper between the two of us, really. But they're definitely favourites still on Saturday. We need to play like three easy-ish games one after the other where we can get 6 or 7 points, and then take the pressure off of ourselves. But they're coming thicker and faster, and the games aren't getting any easier. We have to get a point at least, I'd say, out of a trip to Molineux on Saturday.
Yeah, so listen, let's go over to hear what the fans had to say after the game in the stands. The fans after, so that's straight after the Manchester City game.
Beaten by the better side at the end of the day, Bill. Did well first half, kept our shape well, nicked a goal, unfortunately we couldn't hold on, and their quality told.
It was good to see a battling performance from us in the first half. City are a great team. They are a fantastic football team. They might have played hard and fast with money rules, etc., but they do play really good football. I mean, you know, there are positives from that. To lose to City, a team like that, is no disgrace. We will beat other teams that are less good than City on the performance that we turned in tonight.
A really good performance, first half, second half. You know, the Saudi money tells, doesn't it? You know, it definitely helps when you've got unlimited funds like that. And, you know, I thought first half we did really well. You know, a lot of positive green shoots there to build on. Mark Flecken, though his confidence the world are good, I thought he was superb. Reguilon had a really good game. I don't think there were too many people who had poor games out there, so you've got to take that into Wolves and see what happens. It's going to be tough the next few games, but we'll get people back soon and everything will be fine.
They're quite good, aren't they, Man City? I mean, you know, if you sit back and watch it and take your Brentford hat off, it's some of the best football probably ever played at a Brentford game. You know, their quality throughout, pace, which is the thing we're really missing the most. I thought, you know, with a bit of pace up front, we could have done something different in the second half, but we didn't have anything that really troubled us once we got behind. But, you know, none of us expected much out of this. We got a better performance than we thought we were going to get, but the result was pretty much as expected. But we need some points soon, Bill.
They're very good team. They've got some fantastic players. I thought Foden was outstanding. I think it's so difficult to stop them. And once they get their noses in front, they just keep the ball so well. I thought we played really well, especially the first half. We gave them a real fright. And I'm just going to say this. I've been very, very critical of Mark Flecken until today. And he was absolutely outstanding in that first half. And he does not deserve to have conceded 3 goals, because he was outstanding. He made 9 saves, I think, and got the assist for the goal. And, you know, absolutely fair play to him. It was brilliant. Listen to that. He deserves it.
They were really good. I'm not saying Man City weren't, but they didn't blow us off our feet. I think we did more than enough in the game to get something out of it. If we were tighter, I mean, Man City absolutely love being boring, if I can say that, being boring. I reckon about 45 minutes, if not more, of that game was killed by them just knocking the ball around. And I'm not a coach, but I don't quite know why Thomas Frank hasn't changed the game plan up to just press everything a bit tighter. They don't like it. But we back off, we sit deep like we normally do. Yes, we're tight in the box and they couldn't get it through a lot of the time, but they are more than happy to kill time knocking it around the outside. So why are we letting them? I don't quite understand why we're letting them.
It can be also a little bit kind of churlish for you to go out and then moan about Man City's, not about you in general, about what they've got against us. But on the other hand, you look at it and you think, I say, listen, you're playing a game of Monopoly, and right, and then you're playing, I'm playing against you, and you've got every single every single house, every single thing on the board. You've got Lippin Park Lane, yeah, and you've got everything like. And I'm playing against you. Yeah, yeah, I'm saying. And I'm playing against you, and I'm thinking, what's the point? Because you've got them all. And at the end of the day, I might still beat you somehow by throwing loads of sixes and getting and get some money. But the chances are it's going to be unlikely. And what's the fun in there?
Well, there's not much fun in it. I mean, it's definitely like a two-tier league, isn't it? The teams have got loads of money, the top six or whatever, just they can buy their way to success. And everyone else is sort of scrabbling around for a bit of form, really. And you know, they might be well coached, they might be buying well, but you know, you just can't compete on that. It's not a level playing field, is it? It's not. So that makes the league less competitive, and that's less fun to watch, I think.
Honestly, point me to a City fan that finds their football exciting. I mean, I know it's about results, I know you want the points, but, and you said, like, you come here to be entertained, you come here to watch a good game of football. I absolutely don't mind losing when it's a great cracking game for both sides. But he said, it's just not exciting to watch. I mean, Doku's very exciting. He's about...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The most enjoyable thing that they've got to offer at the moment. But you said they've got one very simple game plan and it's boring, but it works. So they got the 3 points, didn't it?
So there you go, fans after the Manchester City game, pretty happy, pretty straightforward. You know, they're you know, listen, mate, it's Manchester City, isn't it? And as you heard, there's a little bit of a little bit. Listen, not being churlish there as well, but you know, there's a little bit of a kind of just a little discussion there about Manchester City, because look, there's no denying they've got some great players. There's no denying that they can play football. But Manchester City are just one of those teams where, I'll be honest with you, I don't rush to go and see them play, just because I see football as a bit of a hole. And I described it as a, you know, as playing against somebody with a monopoly, on the monopoly board. And they've literally, you're playing against somebody who's got literally all the squares, all the houses on a monopoly board. And you go there and it's just like, you're just going to struggle to win that game. You know what I'm saying? And Manchester City, they've got all the wealth in the whole world, so they can buy anybody they want to, and they can get the best coach and the best everything like that. And to me, I just kind of don't see the point in playing football in that environment. It's almost like one of the scenarios where your win is that if you can get a sneaky little win out of them. And for me, I'll be honest with you, and I know a lot of people won't agree with this, because they say, oh, it should be everybody, if somebody's got more money than the others, then they should be able to use it. But I'd like to see if every team had the same budget, the same amount of money, and you had to go out there and buy players and be clever with that money and clever how you did things, and then you go against each other and see how you go. Because I know a lot of the big clubs wouldn't like that, because at the end of the day, it means that they couldn't. Their strength is their financial clout. It isn't Macy's, you know, how clever that they use it. It's like that they can just go in and just whip a player from somebody else once he's shown that he's good enough. You know what I'm saying? But I'd love it if we could go out there and basically teams were all on an even keel, and you had to show how clever you are out there, because that would be more exciting. Because also what you do is you get more turnover. So you get more teams that are kind of winning things when they shouldn't be winning things and all this kind of stuff. Whereas at the moment now, you know, it's the top three or the top four, the top six are always going to be there. And if somebody pops in there, it's a bit of a surprise, and it makes it a little bit boring. And technically, surely the TV companies and the sponsors and everybody would actually want it to be more exciting, because when it's more exciting, everyone gets excited and they get more engaged. But when it's like this, it's just a little bit dull. But maybe that's just me. The Allard.
I take your point. I think it's a good point. I think it's probably what I would imagine. It's, I don't know much about MLS, but I'm pretty sure that's the way that's run, as are most American sports. So yeah, it would be more exciting, but unfortunately, the Premier League is, you know, is already run by the clubs, and it's not probably in the interest of the bigger clubs with the most money to change that. So, and I also think, unfortunately, they're the ones with loads of supporters who also don't want to change that. So I think it's a great argument, and it may well work, but I'm not sure it's coming.
No, it's certainly not coming. We might as well just have a discussion about what kind of cheese you want the moon made out of. It's things that just aren't going to happen.
Brie,
I'm afraid. Brie. I'll go for cheddar. Thank you very much.
I do think, and it's maybe not quite the same conversation, but there's an interesting sort of defence from the Everton and Nottingham Forest supporters of FFP. That sort of their defence isn't a million miles away from that, and they're sort of saying, well, you know, the tops, whatever, are just doing what they want, so we should just, you know, why should we be found guilty of FFP, and all supporters should come together and be against FFP and against our points deductions, which I think is quite an interesting argument from them. As I'm sort of, as I do feel the opposite about that. I think if you want to take FFP on and take a chance on it, then you need to take, you know, everything that comes with it. But do you know what I mean? There is this sort of there's this weird argument going on from their supporters about that. Not so much the clubs currently, but their supporters.
Yeah. I think you're on that note. I think there are a few interesting times ahead. You know, they're not FFP related. It's a different matter with Chelsea and Man City. Their allegations are, you know, are serious, but they're not FFP necessarily related. They may impact that as well, but that there will be some conclusion with that. I don't. At some stage, that boil will be lanced, and the Forest situation that needs to be sorted out fairly pronto, because you can't settle that after the final whistles happens in May. You know, they need to know how many points they've got deducted soon to know what they're up against. So, you know, there is some repercussions coming. Interesting times ahead.
It's interesting that with Forest and the Everton recent FFP is that although the process all takes place before the end of the season, as I understand it, the final appeals, the conclusion of the final appeals is 5 days or something after the end of the season. And I'm already really nervous about how that's going to affect. I'm not talking about Brentford. I mean, I might be talking about Brentford. I'm not, but this isn't a Brentford thing. This is just the whole bloody thing. Is that it feels like at the moment with the timeline, there's a real chance, especially with the way the league's panning out, and now Luton have started picking up points. There is a real chance that we're going to get to the final games of the season, and there will still be one or maybe two appeals in place that will have an impact on relegation.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway, listen, just going back to the game as well, or going back to our team, again, me glass half full. Listen, let's just look at the positives, because at the end of the day, it's how our team is building and panning towards the end of the season, which is most important for us. So people laughed at us when we signed Neil Mopay at the beginning of the season. We were all really happy, and they just laughed at us, especially Everton fans, even Brighton fans to a certain extent, and also other fans, West Ham fans. Oh, they're all going, oh, I hate Wheaton, Mopay's rubbish. What you sign him for? I turned around to one of my mates and I said to him, I think he's going to score 10 goals for us this season. I said, that's all I need. That's all we need for him to do is to score 10 goals for us this season. Because if he does, he's just come there and done a job, because he is a fill-in striker and a fill-in player. And people are just, you know, laughing. But all of a sudden now, Neil Mopay is on fire. Your defence is terrified. What I'll say is that he has been one of the players who's voted for the Premier League Goal of the Month, which is that brilliant goal he scored against Forest. Whether or not he won it or not, I don't know as yet, but you should find out very soon. But Neil Mopay has scored 5 in 5 for Brentford. He has scored 7 goals in total for Brentford, and I think he's got 3 assists. He might have more, but I think he's got at least 3 assists for us as well. So, I mean, not being funny, but he's not been a bad addition to the side, seeing as he is not the fastest person in the world. And he is, he's been, and in recent games as well, he hasn't got any Brian Boomer or anything else around him. So, like, you know, Neil Mopay he could end up being Everton's highest goal scorer, their top goal scorer, not even playing for them, like, you know. But Neil Mopay, he has got his, I hate to use the word faults, but he's got his restrictions. But also, I'm not being funny, he has definitely been an asset to us, the Allard.
Yes, he has. He may also be a problem because of everything else you've described. Because yes, he scored goals, but we're not winning games, albeit we beat Forest. Yeah, that's not his fault. But it feels like we've got a real problem with the ball continually coming back at us at the moment. And I just feel that's because, at least with Tony back, you have an out ball to Tony's head, but you don't have another out ball. Whereas previously you had an out ball into channels where Mbeumo can run into it or maybe Wiesa. So I'm really I'm a bit like this with Mopay. I'm like, oh yeah, oh no, oh yeah, oh no, oh yeah, oh no. I was a bit confused why we didn't. I'm a bit confused at the moment why we didn't. If you think about Foden and all the goals he scored, it was when he got beyond Haaland. And I'm a bit confused why we haven't tried KLP for the last 25 minutes of the game to run on beyond Tony, you know, to replace Mopay and run beyond Tony. So I'm sort of, I do agree, but I don't agree. And that doesn't really make any sense. But I do think that as good as he's scoring goals, but he's also part of the problem. Do you see what I mean?
It does. But the reality is that, I mean, I always saw Neil Maupay as a bit of a coming off the bench type player. I mean, things have sort of kind of changed because of injuries and other situations and the AFCON, and it's going to revert to form. You know, it's going to come February, March, and I believe that Maupay is going to be players where all of a sudden, boom, Neil Maupay is coming on, but it's not going to be like, oh Christ, he's coming on. It's like, yes, Neil Maupay is coming on because he's got that bit between his teeth. So that's where I see it as being a bit of a bonus. He's already scored 7 goals. I do believe he's going to get to his 10 goals this season, which I think is going to be marvellous. So him with his 10 goals, Ivan Toney with his 10 goals, maybe it's going to be quite an interesting sort of end to the season for the Bees. As you can see, Chirpy B, he's predicting all sorts of stuff, which is probably going to be, I'm going to be eating my words by the end of the season after all of this, like, you know.
I don't know about your defence is terrified. Your defence is shithoused, I probably say. I mean, I think that, you know, I spoke about that in the build-up to the City game. I call me a killjoy, call me miserable, but I think he's a bit of a liability at times. You know, the throwing the dart thing, I think that backfired a bit. And, you know, having a go at Walker's misses, or his home life about scoring away to his face, I don't think that's very clever. I think it's very un-Brentford. I think Brentford's... you know, we've got a way of doing things. I don't think it is that. It is amusing. I mean, I'll be a liar to say I didn't laugh when I saw him doing the Madison darts at New White Hart Lane. But I hear what you say, the Allard, about KLP running beyond, but he's been so busy at left back. I don't think it's, you know, he's, you know what I mean? Until Reguilon's now, you know, hopefully he's here for a run that lasts to the end of the season. Maybe KLP is now able to do that. Can I mention Ivan Toney on Monday night? Because I just thought he was well off of it. I know he was good in parts. He looked like he was feeling the 90 minutes of catching up with him. I think he was match fit for the Forest game, and I think 3 games his legs are aching a bit. but you know, he'll get there. I don't think he looks as happy as I expected him to be back, but I might be wrong. I might be reading his body language a bit skewed.
Yeah. Yeah, and just quickly coming back to our player of the match as well. We've got the Bisotti Global Player of the Match, which is done by the Tasmanian Bee over in Tasmania as well, who's coming over for the Sheffield United game and I think maybe the Brighton game or something like that. But he's coming over with his whole family over for Tasmania, and he's very excited about that, which is all good. But he's done the poll, and he said to be Flecken was the winner, right? I mean, is the Flecken was the winner. Then we had Reguilon as number 2. And can you remember who's number 3, lady? Oh, I can't remember who's number 3.
Was it Norgard? I think
Norgard was possibly number 3. You know, we should check on our facts and figures, actually. But anyway, but that's it. But he said it was the first time there was actually unanimous, right, choose it. So it's the first time there was actually a unanimous number 1 out there, so which is all good. So there you go. Tell you what, we're going to go over to JB. He's going to give us some facts and some funk after that Manchester City game. He's going to be sequencing himself right up. Let's go back to JB and let's have a listen to his facts and his funk.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Against Manchester City, Sergio Reguilón started on the left-hand side of defence for the first time. He therefore became the eighth different starting player we have used in that position in our 26 League and Cup games this season. We've also had Henry, Hickey and Janelt 5 times, Godos and Lewis Potter 4, and Aya and Rosaleth 1 each. In the City game, we had 8 corners, our second highest of the season, and in the top 15% of all our Premier League games. Neil Maupay scored for the third Premier League game running. Only Ivan has done that previously, scoring in 4 successive games he played during last season. Including the 2 FA Cup games with Wolves, Neil has now scored in the last 5 games he's played. Since joining the league in 1920, and excluding JPT games, he's the 10th player to achieve that feat. There's only been 5 players who've scored in 6 successive games. The last was Clayton Donaldson in 2012, and before him, DJ Campbell, just before we sold him, Nicky Forster, Joe Allen, Francis Joseph, Jim Towers, and Dave McCulloch. McCulloch also had a run of scoring in 7 games. But the club record set in 1951 is when Fred Monk was on the score sheet for 9 consecutive games.
So there you go, JB with his facts and some sequencing funk. And that was actually, just going back to the man of the match, actually, that was Flecken's second man of the match, breaking a 17-game drought where he did not appear in the top 3 man of the match at all. So, like I said to you, he's back. And I also liked his press conference interview where he just said, you know, he admitted, he goes, basically, oh, I've been quite shit. But he did pretty much. And he said, but I'm glad that everyone can actually see the type of keeper that I am. And I thought, that's the type of words that we want to hear. Now you need to keep it up. So, which is all good. Anyway, tell you something. We've heard facts and funk. Now we need some stats and some tactics from the Bees breakdown. Possibly we've got the Gowler in the place. He's going to give us the lowdown on the Manchester City game, what happened there, and also he's going to look forward to the Wolverhampton Wanderers match.
Hey, this is Jacob Gowler with Bees Breakdown. So for that Manchester City match, I thought that Brentford's change to less pressing did cause Manchester City trouble. I thought that Brentford's low block initially frustrated City and forced them into some long-range efforts. But even those long shots were extremely dangerous because of City's phenomenal finishing. City had 8 shots on target outside the box, amounting to 1.8 post-shot XG. And those same shots totaled to 0.23 XG, which just shows how accurate they were in turning low percentage chances into high percentage chances. And overall, while Brentford held City to only 2.09 XG, City's phenomenal finishing helped them record their highest post-shot XG all season at 4.35. And I think there are at least 2 bright spots for Brentford. One, Flecken clearly had his best performance of the season, which Bees fans will hope to see carry over into the upcoming fixtures. And 2, Reguilón put in a brilliant shift, not only his pinpoint crosses leading to a few chances for the Bees, but his pace and vision to cut out some of City's crosses or switches is something that Brentford has been missing with Rico out. Alright, so now for that Wolves preview. So Brentford faced them for the 4th time since Christmas, and the Bees have come away with 2 losses and 1 draw in that time. They're currently 10th, but their underlying numbers suggest that they should be a bit closer to the bottom. They're 5th for post-shot XG allowed, but their keeper has overperformed. He saved 3 more goals than expected, and he stopped the most crosses so far this season. Wolves have completed the most successful take-ons this season and have the 2nd most shot-creating actions from those take-ons, with Cunha accounting for most of those, and he also leads Wolves in XG created. They also have the 3rd most ball recoveries, so look out for Premier League leader for ball recoveries, Christian Norgaard, to win some second balls and help get Brentford a much-needed 3 points.
So there you go, the Gowler, the Bees Breakdown, massive in the house. And yeah, check it out, Bees Breakdown. He's done his Manchester City breakdown as well, and he's broken it right down so that we can have tears in our eyes to just see how Manchester City just took the second half by the the ball by the horns, by the neck, but if you want to take it, and they just really just turned everything on its head, and Foden had a little bit of a field day. And listen, but like I said, you can learn from that. But listen, we're going to look forward Saturday, Wolverhampton Wanderers. We played them 3 times already so far. We got to play them 1 more time. If we take anything from this, we should know how they play. We should know their players. We should know what they do. So tell you what, we're going to go away, have a little drink. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about how we are actually going to give Wolverhampton Wanderers a bit of a game. Wolverhampton Wanderers, Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff. Is it a must-win game? I don't think so at the moment now. I'd love to win. I think it'd be good to get a point, but it's not a must-win game. But it'll sort of kind of keep, like I said to you, just it'll keep us our head above water if we can get some points out of this one. Wolves delved into the transfer market, so you know they've got some good players, and we don't seem to be able to keep a clean sheet. Going into this game, the Allard, are you a little bit nervous?
Yeah, I'm proper nervous. I will expand it a little bit. It's because the reason I'm nervous is because they've got loads of pace, and I think our back three at the moment are looking a little bit. So there is an argument you might want to move Iyer into the back three. Don't think that will happen. Or you go with the back four, and then you play Iyer and Reguilon as your left back and right back, and they're closer to the centre back, so they are, you know, in a way supporting with their pace because they're both, you know, quick. But if you go four at the back, it's 4-3-3. I can't for the life of me pick a front three that would work with current players available, especially after, and this was when I was going back to the Joshua Silva injury. So I'm sort of thinking we're going to stick with 3-5-2, and I'm just hoping that we find a way of exploiting any weaknesses Wolves have got at the back, because I would imagine it will be Tony and Mope up front. Mope's on a goal scoring run, but I've already explained my thoughts about them two playing together. So I think it's going to be a tricky business. And when it comes down to it, the one thing I've always said a lot on this podcast, is I like it. I always want us to have more points than games played. And if we lose on Saturday, for the first time, I think, in the Premier League, we drop below points versus games played.
Yeah, it is worrying. And you've also got you know, if we don't get anything out of the game, we've got the prospect of looking at the other teams who are below us. Fortunately, Everton have a trip to Man City. I assume Man City are going to win that. Burnley have a trip to Liverpool, although Burnley are, you know, well sort of below us. But more worryingly, Luton are at home to Sheffield United, where you expect on current form Luton to win. And if we don't get anything and they do get a win, that puts us below Luton. Psychologically, that's not great.
Game in hand?
Games in hand, but psychologically it's still not great, because you know we go Brentford against Luton, we're way better than them. And that's, you know, you can argue that we're not, you know. So I'm very calm about our prospects for the rest of the season, but I just think, you know, the visuals when the graphs come up and where Brentford are in the table and blah blah blah, where they talk about us on Match of the Day on Saturday night, if we haven't got 3 points out of this game, it could be looking really, really shitty. So Sheffield United look dead and out for the count. You know, they look like they're relegated already. Burnley, it's going to take a miracle. That's why I say this Forest situation needs sorting out. They if they are going to get a points deduction, it needs to happen soon, so we know where we're at. And if they're not going to get one, equally, we need to know exactly where we're at. So resolution needs to be happening, but more importantly, we need to get at least a point out of that game.
Yeah, we need to get a point.
Yeah, the game in hand thing has always been making me laugh, because we had two games in hand, didn't we? But they were both against Man City.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah. Which, but they are, to a certain extent, yes, they are. But then, you know, you've just got a certain amount of games, so you have to play everybody else as well. So again, you can't kind of work. If Manchester City was at the end of the season, you know, then you got games earlier. So it's almost like when the sequence of games are happening, people look at the games in front of them, but you've got to look at the whole period to say, look, these are the amount of games that we got to play, and these are the teams that we got to play.
And you're absolutely right, Bill, which is why I don't look too much. I don't really even look at the table, because I know if you end the season with as many points as there are games played, you'll be fine. So my barometer is only ever How many games have we played? How many points have we got? And we're 22-22.
Yeah, so listen, we've been talking about games, we've been talking about Wolverhampton Wanderers, even though we don't really know that much about them, but we know that Dave from Talking Wolves knows a lot about them. So we're going to go over to Wolverhampton. Dave's just going to give us a little lowdown on Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Hello, Brentford fans. It's Dave again from Talking Wolves. What is it, the fourth time now I think we've played you guys in just over a month, and Wolves have just about edged it really in those fixtures, but they've been, I mean, mainly in the FA Cup games, they were pretty close games. And I think the Premier League game could have been so different as well. You know, I think you gifted us a couple of the goals. Nathan Collins, ex-Wolves player, probably wouldn't have been too happy with how his performance had gone. But looking forward to it again. You know, you guys have given us some tricky games over the last few years. I remember the first year you came up into the Premier League a couple of years ago, one of the most frustrating games I've been to as a home fan with Thomas Frank. Just probably knowing that season that you were going to have to, you know, use the dark arts almost in some games to get the upper hand and frustrate your opposition. And that's exactly what he did. And Brentford ultimately have been a very, very solid Premier League team over the last couple of years. This year, from the outsider, looks like it's been a bit more difficult. You've had your injuries. Obviously, Ivan Toney being missing is a big one. And that's what I'm really looking for. Well, we're going to be interested in going into this game is the return of Ivan Toney, because I think, personally, from a Wolves point of view, I think we have edged it and got the better of you. And I felt like we were the better team in the last three games. But with Toney, I think there's just going to be, just the presence of him is going to make it a really interesting game, because I think he adds fear into the opposition. But also, I think he gives a lot of confidence into the other Brentford players as well. I think you've seen that over the last couple of fixtures for you guys, although a couple of defeats recently, but the win against Nottingham Forest, and you've been competitive in the last couple of games against Spurs and City as well. And I think that's what Ivan Toney brings. You know, he's got the better, you know, output now out of Neil Maupay as well, which I'm sure you guys are going to be delighted with. But I think you'll be looking at this fixture and hoping that Brentford can get some points out of it. I was talking about it on my preview on our channel on YouTube, and I was just looking at some of your fixtures, and you guys have got, you know, bearing in mind you've just played Spurs and Chelsea, Spurs and City, you've got a horrible little run of fixtures coming up as well. So I think you guys may have to look at this game and think, we've got to try our hardest to get some points out of it. I think you're more than good enough to upset some of the bigger boys, to be fair. So we'll have to wait and see. Looking at Wolves, though, it's been a really, really, really intriguing season. I'm sure I would have, you know, spoke about some of it in the last time I spoke to you, but since the start of the season, you know, very quick rundown. Lopetegui walked out in the club about a week before the season. Gary O'Neill takes charge just a few days before, so he doesn't really have a pre-season. And it was sort of a block of five games where you could see there was real teething problems for Wolves. The quality of football was okay, but just conceding too many goals and not winning games. In the end, Gary O'Neill's switched the system up. We've gone with a back five and not really looked back since. Beat Manchester City at home. Since then, we've picked up some great results, beating Spurs at home. You know, picked up points against Villa, doing really, really well. Beating Chelsea, got the league double over Chelsea, actually, the first time for us since the 70s. And since January, you know, there've been a really, really good run of consistency from Wolves. The interesting thing is, you know, we've had our own hiccups. You know, Pedro Neto, who is one of the top assisters in the Premier League, was out injured for a couple of months. We coped without him. Last month and a half, we've been without Hwang Ki-chan. We've been without Ryan Aitnori, who's our left-back, who's a really solid player, and a couple of squad players as well, which always makes it difficult for Wolves. And, you know, you struggle a little bit with flexibility when you're missing a few squad players. Mario Lemina, unfortunately, his father passed away as well, so he was missing for a while. And, you know, I think it was a young lad, Joe Hodge, that started one of the games against you boys. So we've had our issues ourselves, but the consistency on the pitch has been always there. And I think full credit to Gary O'Neill. He's got, you know, one of the reasons Lopetegui left the club was he wanted more money, but also he felt the squad that he had couldn't compete. And you know, I think Gary O'Neill has shown that we can compete. We've got some really seriously quality, you know, talented players. But the outputs now of Hwang Ki-chan, Mateus Cunha, Pedro Neto, Pablo Sarabia, they're 4, 5, 6 times of what they were last season. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal change in fortunes towards a team that really, really struggled to score over the last couple of years are now scoring goals and making life very, very difficult. Home form has been great for Wolves. Away form, not so good. But saying that, our last couple of games, you know, against yourselves, we beat you quite heavily. Before the new year, we've got a point against Brighton away, which wasn't easy. We beat Chelsea away. So hopefully that's starting to change fortunes as well. Our home running is favourable. Look, no game in the Premier League is easy, but I look at our home running and I think there's only one team in the top six now that we've got between now and the end of the season at home. So Wolves could really, really pick up a solid run of form going into the end of the season. Do I think we're good enough for Europe? Maybe. It's me sitting on the fence a little bit, but I think we've got the quality to get there. Maybe the Conference League, but there's so many good teams like your Newcastles, your Brightons. I think Chelsea could still easily come into it. Manchester United obviously are going to improve. So there's a lot of good teams in and around there. It's just up to Wolves to keep that consistency and see where we go from there. I think Wolves will go unchanged after that Chelsea game. They've got two key players for you guys to look at. Pedro Neto, Mateus Cunha, both on fire at the moment. Both getting their goals and getting their goal contributions. I think it'll be a 2-1 Wolves win. I've got to back my own team. I don't think it'll be an easy game. I think Tony's going to be a big boost for you. But I'm going to go with Wolves 2, Brentford 1. After Saturday, guys, all the best of luck for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll speak again next season. I'm sure Brentford, well, I know Brentford are far too good to go down. And I think you'll have a change in fortunes with the big man back up front as well. So all the best, guys, and I'll catch you next time.
So there you go, Dave, from Talking Wolves, talking about Wolves, finishing, scoring chances strong, counter-attack strong, coming back from losing positions strong, protecting the lead strong, stealing the ball from the opposition strong, defending against skillful players weak, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas very weak, Wolverhampton Wanderers. We'll have our work cut out against us, won't we, the Allard?
Yeah. I mean, I've already said it. We will. Wolves are a good side. He's done a brilliant job. O'Neill's just done a brilliant job. He's just turned them into a really good side. I mean, he did the similar job with Bournemouth last season. I think at the beginning of this season, loads of people had Wolves to be in the bottom four. Maybe, you know, I think a lot of people were already saying the bottom three would be the bottom three, but certainly had Wolves as next most at risk. And he's done a brilliant job. And I think, to be honest, you could see it in that Man United game. Was that their first game of the season or one of their early games? They looked really good that night. And I remember watching it thinking, oh, Wolves are going to be quite good this season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They did great.
Yeah. And just quickly, just finally, looking at this, the team itself, because I think this is quite important because we're talking about players coming in, coming out, going, is that the other. The team itself, do you sort of predict any sort of changes from the teams that we've had before that we've been playing before? You know, obviously we've got our, you know, you're talking about, will we go three at the back, will we go four at the back? We don't know about Aya. You know, do you think, you know, Goddess has flown back? Do you think he might feature? Do you think Rosdev's going to be in? Is Rosdev going to be out? Or do you think we pretty much keep the same team and the same formations we did at Man City?
I suspect we'll do what we did at Man City because I don't think there's much appetite at the moment for doing anything else. We did play 4-3-3 in the first Wolves game, but I just don't see a front three. You can't play Mopé as a winger, right? The only way, he's the one scoring goals. The only way you can fit him in the team is to play 3-5-2 if Tony's playing. He's not going to play on the wing. So I don't really see what other options there are. It would have to be that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it does, and they look like they're on the same wavelength. Morpé and Tony, they there is a lack of pace, but there is seems to be an understanding and a mutual respect there. So more of the same. Godos will come straight back onto the bench. I can't see him fitting in anywhere unless there's, heaven forbid, more injuries.
Yeah, I'll actually say it looks like they're having fun together. Actually, now the end.
Yeah. And I was also going to add that we did play 4-4-2, I think, against Brighton in the first half, but that was pretty grim. So, that's the first time we played that in many, many, many years, probably since Rosler. So, I'm not sure we'll revisit that. I would imagine, we'll stick with the 3-5-2. Maybe Aya comes in for Rosler, although we don't generally play him as a wing-back.
Yeah, okay. So, listen, just going around the table here, score prediction, Laney.
2-2.
Oh, the Allard.
1-1. Wishful thinking, 1-1.
And myself, I've gone 1-1 as well. I'm on the Talking Wolves podcast. I've gone 1-1. I'll be happy with 1-1 as well. So,
Listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thanks for subscribing to us. Thanks for buying us a beer. Besotted.com/beer. Thanks for listening to all the podcasts. Listen to the post-match seat podcast if you want to as well. Just listen to all our podcasts on prideofwest.london. And thank you for supporting Besotted yet once again. We've got lots of people been coming up to us and just telling us, you know, just really positive things. And it's really good to see you. Just come down the globe, have a little drink with us, just sit down and just chill. As they say, Wolverhampton Wanderers on Saturday. Check us out, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Like I said, prideofwest.london. Then after that, we'll be back the following week as we do the build-up to Arsenal. No doubt there'll be some sort of AFTV action going on in there. But let's not focus on that one. Let's focus on trying to get 3 points at Wolverhampton Wanderers. I'm sitting around here. I'm Billy Grant. I've got the adult in place.
Who are you, bees?
You've got the Laney in house.
Good afternoon.
And my name's Billy the Bee. And like I said, you're getting on Wolverhampton. Let's go. Let's do it. Come on. Come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees.
Let's get them Wanderers. Let's just do them once. Come on. Just once. Just once this season. Come on, you bees.
Jeremy Dodgers.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.